Welcome to Lead with Heart. I'm Dr. Jesse Hansen, and today we explore the essence of leadership beyond strategy and status. You're watching Now Media Television. Hello, and welcome to Lead with Heart, the show where strategy meets soul, where we look deeper at not only what leadership really is, how leaders show up in this world we live in, but also, most importantly, what is it that makes leaders great? Learning more about their own authentic, vulnerable stories, learning about how they become who they are. This is why we're here. This is what we're here to talk about on Lead with Heart. And so today, I am delighted to be joined by Paul Finkbeiner. He is a respected leader with over 30 years of experience in the real estate industry. Paul is the president of Fink Advisory Management Corp, and he's helped grow and oversee multi-billion dollar platforms across Canada, the US, the UK, and Ireland. But beyond the numbers, Paul is known for his belief in adding value, working with people he genuinely enjoys, and leading with heart. So in this first segment, we're going to take a little bit of a blast back to the past, Paul, and talk about who you were. You know, and this is a segment where it's really up to you what you feel comfortable. Obviously, as a psychologist, you know, I'm into things like childhood histories. I'm into understanding the development across time. So I just wonder, you know, like, take us back to little Paul. Did you always knew the real estate fascination? What are some of the things that make you who you are?
Well, I've come to realize that one of the rare things about my background is that I grew up in a small village and went to a two-room schoolhouse. So in that, you know, you had four rows in a classroom. They taught you grade ones, two, three, four. I could walk to school, and I was one of four children. I was the youngest. But it was a lot of stuff was really simple for me as a kid growing up. Like when you only have to compete against six kids in your class, or there's only, you know, that many people in the playground, it's a different story. And then later on, what they did was they closed down all those two-room schoolhouses and moved us to a large modern school where we all got bussed in. So early days, and for me, it was really, really simple things. There weren't a lot of kids to be friends with. There weren't a lot of things to do, but there wasn't a lot of places to get into trouble. You know, things that we would do is we go grab a bamboo pole and go fishing in the creeks.
Okay.
And like I said, it was really simple. My dad was a lab technologist. My mom was a nurse. I had no clue what I wanted to do. Not a clue. But I was pretty good in school, and that was kind of how it started for me. I mean, the town I grew up in was Thornton. Another thing that I had to do as when I got into high school was I more or less hitchhiked into school and back every day.
Hitchhiked?
Because hitchhiked? If I played sports, there were no buses.
Okay. Wow.
So, yeah.
Hitchhiking as young as?
16, 15.
Wow.
And for the most part, I would normally get a ride that would come out of the town of the city of Barrie into my town. But a lot of times you got stuck and you were a couple hours, and then I might have to call my parents to come pick me up. But playing sports was an important thing for me. And the only way to do it was hitchhike.
Wow.
And, you know, I know that a lot of people look at these days. I never got in a bad car ride, but yeah, for the most part, it was, you know, that was what I had to do.
Right.
And I have one great memory of leaving the high school with two buddies, and we were singing that song "Oonga Chaka, Oonga Chaka." I can't fight this feeling deep inside of me. And the sun was shining, and I had to walk home, or I had to walk and then hitchhike. But I just remember it like it was yesterday, and it was a beautiful memory.
Wow.
And stuff like this makes me think of those things. And I want to thank you for reconnecting me with that day, because it just brought some of this stuff has brought back great memories.
It's beautiful. I'm happy to hear that. And yeah, just to acknowledge that the simplicity of it, I mean, already just appreciating that that's a very different upbringing than almost anybody left on the planet with so many big cities and everything, but also just that level of, you know, I wonder as we continue to explore your story more, but just that having what I always call about imprints, like I think of memories as imprints, we're getting imprinted, you being imprinted from a young age was sort of a simple life. I'd say obviously some people look at that and like, oh, that was boring or how did you survive? But the other angle of it is like, wow, you learn to appreciate the simple things in life. You learn to make a bamboo pole into a fishing rod and that was better than a PlayStation 5 back then, right?
Yeah.
So it's amazing to hear that. And I wonder also if you're, yeah, I hear that too. And that the way you just got all happy and singing was just a feel too, like there's a way, there's always a way to see the beauty in it as opposed to, oh, I'm stranded and I have to walk and da-da-da. It's like, nope, bringing in the power of song and music. So it makes me curious if you're open to sharing it with us, Paul. Yeah, you know, all families, we get into roles, you know, for example, myself as a young one, my sister was the bad girl and often coming home with the police more than the school bus. And I was the good boy, always getting it right. And, you know, she, of course, did not like me for that. So I'm just curious. Yeah, I don't even know about siblings, but what kind of roles did you step into in young into adolescence? And let's kind of move forward into your 20s, say.
Well, I guess when I reflect, my mom and dad were pretty down to earth. Both had come from very small places. And neither one had gone to university. My dad was a lab technologist, so he went to lab school. My mom was a nurse who went to nursing school. And all they wanted from us was, you know, work hard, get good marks. But there wasn't a lot of pressure. And I was one of four, so I was the baby. So my role ended up being the baby. Like, I probably got away with more because I was a sister, brother, sister, me. And there was an 8-year span. So they went through a lot of the crap. And then by the time I was coming along, it was the road was pretty well paved. And, you know, I the one thing that with my parents, I would say that they were supportive, but they weren't overly, I didn't hear, I'm proud of you much. Mm-hmm. And that's something I tried to do with my kids, but it was still a very supportive way of growing up. And, you know, I never got pressure to get good marks. I got good marks. Yeah. I never got pressure to play on any sports team because my parents didn't play a lot of sports, but I did. And when I reflect going through this exercise, something, and I don't know necessarily why this happened, but in my high school career, I was a captain 8 different times. So by my last 2 years, captain of the football team, captain of the basketball team, captain of the rugby team. And so my early leadership was much more about teams and sports. Mm-hmm. And it was great grounding. But, you know, and I was definitely not the best athlete. I was definitely not the fastest, the strongest. But I guess the coaches saw something in me that was different and allowed me to be captains. And I took on that responsibility very seriously in those days.
What do you imagine it was they saw in you? Because that's interesting, right? That not necessarily the most big alpha jock guy to be the leader, but you were invited into leadership so young.
I think what they saw in me was an ability to get along with a lot of people. Coming from a small town, and I had there was no real reputation. Like somebody who might have come from a big school in Barrie, where I went to high school, might have had a different reputation. But to me, they just saw a coordinated guy who was probably capable of taking on leadership.
Yeah.
Strong enough, because I guess the other thing too, preceding me was my brother and sister. So I would get I got some benefit from them seeing that they were both okay athletes or decent athletes, and that therefore that I could probably handle it. But, you know, it was one other thing I should mention that was a very important thing in my leadership development was in Ontario, what they did the summer after grade 11 was there was a leadership camp, and it was all for athletes. And they would send one student from all the different high schools to this leadership camp for a 2-week period. And there were, I think, different two-week sessions. But that was where I learned a lot about what being a leader was about. It was about leading by example.
Yeah.
It was about not yelling at people. It was about being in control. And there was a lot of great things that came out of that camp.
Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. You got that exposure so young. And I still feel like, yeah, there's probably even more than meets the eye to this story, in the sense of there's a charisma I think you walk with as well, that people just innately feel. And I also take from your share that it's not necessarily always the fastest or the biggest, strongest athlete. It's the one that can navigate the relational field, as I would call it in psychobabble, but that ability to be, you know, a diplomat, that ability to connect with others and get them to listen to you. So I think, go ahead.
Some of the stories from that was, when I became quarterback, which was, I guess, grade 11, 12, and 13, they told me, when you walk to the line, you have to look like you own the place. Mm-hmm. So I took that. And when you're in the huddle, you own the huddle.
Yeah.
No one's allowed to talk. So even my best friends in the huddle would chirp at me, and I go, get off.
Yeah.
And they go, well, why, you know, what are you doing that to me for? I go, that's my job.
Yeah.
So I took it very seriously. I enjoyed and still do enjoy the role of leader. There are some times where it's very lonely.
Yeah.
But I do feel I enjoy taking on the responsibility. I like the idea of inspiring people. I like the idea of getting the best out of people and doing it with kindness.
Yeah.
And very important stuff for me.
Well, beautiful, Paul. And thank you so much for opening up about your childhood and the story thus far. We're going to take a quick break. And when we get back from this break, we're going to continue to learn more about Paul, who he's becoming now, and what's on the path ahead. So stay tuned here on Lead with Heart on Now Media TV. We'll be right back. We'll be right back with more insights, stories, and practices to help you lead from your whole self. This is Lead with Heart on Now Media Television. Leadership isn't just about decisions. It's about presence, compassion, and courage. I'm Dr. Jesse Hansen, somatic psychologist and healer. And on Lead with Heart, we explore what happens when we lead with awareness, compassion, and the body in mind. From brain health to relational intelligence, from trauma-informed leadership to embodied teams, each episode reveals a deeper way to lead. Lead with Heart is airing now on Now Media TV, because the greatest leaders don't just guide people, they awaken them. And we're back. I'm Dr. Jesse Hansen, and you're watching Lead with Heart on Now Media Television. Let's continue embracing leadership with presence and purpose. Welcome back to Lead with Heart. Do you want more of what you're watching? Stay connected to Lead with Heart and every Now Media TV favorite, live or on demand, anytime you like. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS to unlock nonstop bilingual programming in English and Spanish. On the move, you can also catch it on podcasts right from our website at www.nowmedia.tv. From business and news to lifestyle, culture, and beyond, Now Media TV is streaming around the clock, ready whenever you are. Welcome back. We're here on Lead with Heart with Paul Finkbeiner. Thank you so much for joining us today. Opened up about the role of being the baby in the family. Opened up about the role of that, being able to find the joy just in the singing. Help our viewers understand too, what continues to happen to you as you get into your 20s? It sounds like overall healthy upbringing. You know, none of us have perfect childhoods, and yet overall very strong childhood here. As you continue to grow, tell us, you know, towards the real estate direction, but what else came your way as you became, you know, continue, what other ways leadership come through, you know?
Yeah, I think the when I went to university, it was a bit of a challenge going from being a star athlete to, I went to school at Queen's University. My average went from 85 to 55. My athletic career went from being the starting quarterback to being one of nine. And it was a humbling experience. And you learn a lot from, you know, stuff like that. And, you know, I then ended up figuring out a way to enjoy university without some of those high marks and without being the star football player. And I really enjoyed and made great friends at university, and liked it so much that I ended up doing an engineering degree, a master's in engineering, worked for 2 years, and then did an MBA. So I guess my university experience got to be figure out a way to get through it. A pass is good. And that's coming from a guy who was always getting 80 averages. But it humbles you. It makes you understand that marks aren't everything.
Yeah.
It makes you understand that being a good person is important. And it was kind of got to be the friendships that I made. And I, you know, when I was at university, I played football initially, and then I played rugby. And that's where some of my best friendships were. And there's another area of leadership. I won a leadership award at Queen's for my role with the rugby team. I was elected captain. And there's no greater honor, in my opinion, than being elected captain
as opposed
versus being designated.
Yeah,
captain.
Yeah. Wow.
And then there was still, you know, again, with that, there's always great learning that you get out of things like at universities, too. What comes to mind is later on, and this was a great lesson I got from a professor when I was doing my MBA at McGill. Last project of graduating. So there's, you have to be in a group of four. And it was the final thing after 2 years of going to school. And we had three in our group. And one guy was outside the group that we didn't want. And the professor came to me and said, well, you need to take this guy in your group because you only got three, you need four. And I said, I don't want to take him. He's a lightweight. No one likes the guy. And he doesn't pull his weight. What the professor did, and a lot of times academics don't get this, but he said, you tell him.
Hmm.
He made me tell the guy. And I, you know, this is to me is what leadership is about, doing the difficult thing. So I went to him, I said, we don't want you in our group. We hear you're a lightweight. He goes, well, I think you're wrong. I said, I don't want to figure that out. It's the last project of the program. I don't want to do it. And that to me was great on the academic to do that. A lot of times academics don't get that.
Yeah.
And I can give you another story about where an academic doesn't get leadership in life, where same school, different professor said to me, you're a real open, honest guy. You better be careful about that when you get into the business world, because somebody will stab you in the back.
Mm.
And I remember looking at them and I said, I don't care. I said, if they stab me in the back, I won't be a businessman. I'll go be back to being an engineer. It's more important for me to be myself than it is for me to be looking over my shoulder. So
let's pause on that. Feel that for a second. It's more important for me to be myself than to be looking over my shoulder, AKA, yeah, my heart, my soul, my ethics, my human goodness matters more than winning, right?
And yes. Well, also, I've coined my own expression. I've been disappointed in the past. I know I will be disappointed in the future, but I refuse to accept to be disappointed.
Mm.
I want to be optimistic.
Yeah.
I just do not want to be looking over my shoulder. I don't want to work that way. Yeah. I don't want to walk into a deal or into a person and distrust them automatically.
Yeah.
It just doesn't, it's not me.
Right. Wow. No, it's beautiful. It's really beautiful. I'm appreciating that moral compass. And that's exactly what this is about. To lead with heart means to actually choose the heart and the humanness over the head, even though we have to walk with both of them, right?
Yeah.
So I'm curious, Paul, as you share more of this, when did more of the you know, as I've known you, it's more of around the real estate element. How did that come into your path? And anything else you want our viewers to know here to kind of bring us up to speed to who you are now, you know?
Well, I'm surprised with it how in tune I was with being authentic from very early on in my business career. And I'll give a couple examples that, in some cases, I always thought I was pretty naive, but when I say some of these things, I sound pretty mature. So when I was recently graduated from university, I ran into a fellow MBA student who was telling me how hard she was working, how long the hours were, and how crazy it was. And I remember I said to her, well, maybe they think you're stupid. She goes, what? Well, you're drinking the Kool-Aid, and maybe they've given you something that you should be done at 5 o'clock, and it's taking you to 8 o'clock to get it done. I said, I'd sooner be realistic about this stuff. I don't need to work. I want to work smart. I don't want to work hard. I want to, you know, and that, those were some of the things that I reflect on. And then, you know, you kind of, there were just, I had another one where my boss at the time, I was working in Calgary, and he got me a personality profile testing and brought in a psychiatrist or a psychologist to talk to me about it. And he reviewed the results with me and he goes, you're politically naive. And I said, yeah, okay. You don't play the politics. I said, yeah, okay. And he goes, well, here's what I think you should do. I think you should watch your boss leave one evening, then in the morning come in early with the same suit on and pretend that you were there all night. Now, this is a guy giving me advice, Jesse. And I thought that's the stupidest idea. But another person at that age would have went, well, that's what I'm going to do. Because that's what corporate wants. I always had my own mind about what corporate was. And that's even how I feel about leadership. Leadership should be about your own personality and using it to be the leader you want to be based on that personality. It shouldn't be what you read in a book.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be what somebody tells you leaders do. It should be what feels right for you to be a leader.
Yeah. Well said. And another saying that came out of some of the earlier episodes of the show is that to know thyself and you will lead with heart naturally. It's a natural byproduct, right? Is doing the work. And so here you are now, you know, in 2026, you've had a long career. You've been able, and most of your most recent successes in real estate world. I'm wondering here, we do have to take another break soon. So just in a quick note, just let our viewers understand, you know, how you've seen leadership come into real estate. How does that play in, you know, like in terms of just, you know, the ability to be in your heart, the ability to connect with your clients beyond just a business transaction, you know?
Well, I guess I've always thought of, and this more relates to people. Like to me, the whole business thing was always about people. So what I found is we had a situation in my real estate career where we were going from $17 billion in assets to 11. We were losing a $6 billion client. And that client, you know, that was their real estate. They were quite capable of taking it. But my overall direction when I heard the news was, it's all about making sure people get jobs. Other people would have thought my interest in the company or my shares are going to go down or whatever. I was all about being kind to the people, make sure people got jobs. And that to me is just, you know, I'm a big believer in kindness. I always will be.
Yeah. Beautiful. Well, clearly an excellent example of leading with heart, Paul. So thank you for all these shares. When we get back from this break, we're going to look deeper into the process of the lotus, which is the process of transformation. And we're going to learn from Paul about what he knows about transformation. So please stay tuned here on Lead with Heart. We'll be right back. We'll be right back with more insights, stories, and practices to help you lead from your whole self. This is Lead with Heart on Now Media Television. Leadership isn't just about decisions. It's about presence, compassion, and courage. I'm Dr. Jesse Hansen, somatic psychologist and healer. And on Lead with Heart, we explore what happens when we lead with awareness, compassion, and the body in mind. From brain health to relational intelligence, from trauma-informed leadership to embodied teams, each episode reveals a deeper way to lead. Lead with Heart is airing now on Now Media TV, because the greatest leaders don't just guide people, they awaken them. And we're back. I'm Dr. Jesse Hansen, and you're watching Lead with Heart on Now Media Television. Let's continue embracing leadership with presence and purpose. Hello and welcome back to Lead with Heart on Now Media TV. I'm your host, Dr. Jesse Hansen, and I'm delighted to be joined today by Paul Finkbeiner. He's been taking us through his journey of becoming. In this section, we're going to talk about the lotus. The lotus are flowers that grow from less than ideal situations, yet they are so beautiful and powerful, and they've been revered throughout human history as having to do with understanding and knowing our own divinity. So for me as a psychologist, I am somewhat obsessed with transformation. I'm obsessed with this process of people awakening and learning more and more. So far by listening to you today, Paul, what I've been touched by is I have this word I like to use, source codes. And to me, that represents the mixture of science and spirit, because on one hand, codes and neuroscience, it's all very techie and left brain. The word source obviously has a little bit more of a right brain influence of God, creator, whatever you want to call it. So when I'm talking about source codes, what I believe and what science also tells us, in particular the polyvagal theory, is that when we are incarnated, when we come into being a human being, our source code neurological programming is around compassion, kindness, connection, calmness. And if viewers don't know, look up polyvagal theory. It's an amazing approach, Dr. Stephen Porges' work. And it's something that, so far in your story, what you've shared, you've had just an innate, very strong connection to this your whole life, even since young. And so, A, that's beautiful. Congratulations. That's amazing. Give thanks also to your parents. And many of us, and I'm sure as myself, I can relate to it, other viewers can relate to it, life is hard and things come up, and you've painted a beautiful picture of your journey. I'm wondering, in this segment, going into the lotus, how we birth a lotus means we also have to go into the crap from which they grow. Yeah. So the invitation here, Paul, is whether it has to do more with personal or professional, is just to share what feels okay to share, but where has a challenge come up in your life? Where is something that, felt very difficult? Yeah, maybe a few of those.
Yeah. Well, so the thing that I sometimes reflect on is if you said beginning and the end. So the beginning is small town boy, population 300, two-room schoolhouse, head of global real estate, overseeing $27 billion in assets. What you don't appreciate is some of the hiccups in between. So, my first job, I worked as an engineer and didn't like it. Worked there for 2 years. Went back and did the MBA program. After I finished the MBA program, I started with RBC as an account manager. Lasted 1 year. And part of the reason that I was just not a fit. Mm-hmm. So this is my first job, first business job. And one of the things that they said was, as an account manager, you're a cheerleader. And I didn't feel I was a cheerleader. But Jesse, the thing that happened that was scared me is I was searching for what I wanted to do. So I made an appointment to see my boss's boss. Naive kid from small town. When I walked in, my boss's boss was there and my boss was there.
Ooh.
And it hurt. Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's not... it wasn't what I wanted.
Yeah.
And so they more or less let me go, right? And so then I go to my next job, and it's a shopping center company. I got a great job. I'm now in real estate. I had 6 months off where I couldn't find a job. Got this job and was cooking along great. Then I walk in one day, and so I was part of a 5 or 6 person team. I walked in one day. My boss was moved to another company. Two of the guys I worked with were let go. I went from being an analyst to being assistant manager, assistant property manager, cleaning floors and doing whatever you did at 18. So another bump.
Wow. Yeah.
Next, I go to a company called Brookfield. Brookfield when Brookfield wasn't cool. Brookfield's a very successful company. Everything was going great again. Working really hard, real estate's a difficult time. My boss at the time said, I'm going to promote you. You're going to get a salary increase. My boss has changed. The guy came in and said, I'm not giving you a salary increase and I'm not giving you a promotion. So another bump.
Wow.
So then I exit, go to Trizet.
And real quick, just on this, Paul, as you're describing these things that have happened, Yeah, what was it like? Yeah, the emotions involved there, like obviously, like some moments of feeling like, you know, what do you remember going through and all that?
Well, to me, what I went through was I didn't like it, but at this time I'm married and have a child, and I got to find a job.
Yeah.
So it really was. I think what I took from it was, this is about companies being bad people. It's not about people being bad people.
Yeah.
Generally.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some bad acts that were in there, but you know, I came across a lot of nasty situations for even the next one. You know, the next one, I go to a company called Trisec. I move the family to Calgary. Everything's going great. Then I get a promotion and a salary increase, and I get a phone call from the then CEO. He asked me to come to his house. He demoted me and took my salary away.
Wow.
And that's when a friend of mine said, well, you got to build a shit file. Then I get to more of a steady state. But I had, you know, what I say to people is I was let go a couple times, and I never let that bring me down.
Hmm.
And then out of all, even with all those companies that I was talking about, I made very good friendships there that still exist today.
Yeah.
Now, the companies can be quite nasty, but a lot of times it's not you. It's a situation.
Yeah.
And I was just able to, you know, rise above it and move on. So
amazing. What do you imagine, you know, because it's, you know, obviously this kind of thing does happen. You're not the only one that's been let go of, or, you know, have these disappointments come through. Yeah. What do you attribute to how, you know, because I know I've seen it, and I've probably been that guy as well of, you know, getting wallowing in the mud or getting depressed from it. What do you attribute, or what do you think how you managed to transcend it as well as just stay? I guess you did mention one thing, right? Your wife and kid, that motivation to be like, don't cry in the corner for too long, buddy. You need to get on the horsey again, right? But what else in terms of I was thinking of your childhood, or what else do you think?
Where I take a lot of value from is probably the fact that in sports you lost a lot. And you had to move on. And not all the teams that I played on were great successes. And so it made you appreciate that you're not going to win them all. At least that's where, you know, that's my best guess. But a lot of it, almost not having really time to think or time to be sad. It's like, well, you know, you need to make money now. Yeah. Like, you know, I came from pretty humble beginnings. And it was like, wow, I need a job. Yeah. And, you know, I better get over myself.
Yeah. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Even as a psychologist, I'm always preaching to people to get them to feel their emotions and all that. And yet there are times in life where there are certain pressures that, and it's not always a bad thing. There is still a process happening, you know, because it's gotten you to where you are now.
Yeah.
The other clue I wonder about too is just, you mentioned, you know, at young age, being invited into leadership so much, overall getting good marks. You know, I feel like also that probably helped you establish a really strong sense of self. So even all those years later, as you were getting told by boss A, B, or C that, you know, you were getting let go of, you had that strong imprint from childhood to lean into to help you feel like, well, you know what, it does suck, and I know I can do it. I know I'm awesome, so here we go again, right?
Yeah.
That's really beautiful. That's really beautiful. And then I wonder, too, if you're just able to share here around you know, how you feel like showing up leadership in your family, in your life outside of the office.
Well, I think with the family, it's more, I have two boys, and their mother plays a very large role in their lives. And I play my role, and my role tends to be more related to career stuff. Softer side. My wife's a very strong, get stuff done. And the we have very good relationship with both boys. And the fun thing right now is that we're recently grandparents, and then we're expecting twins in the next week. And that's where, you know, that's the next fun leadership stage.
Like,
what's being a grandfather look like? And it's going to be different. It's going to be how I want to be a grandfather, and how I'm going to be able to fill in, and things that I can provide. And that's where you get into wisdom And even that's the whole thing that's going on right now in my current career as an advisor, is it's the wisdom and the things that I've seen, these stories that I tell, and the feelings that I had. And, you know, the one situation I remember saying to a guy, he was struggling about where to work, whether to work for us or work for somebody else. And my comment to him was, go ask your wife. Don't ask me. Yeah. I mean, I want you to do what is right for you as a person. Yeah. And that was something that I did throughout my career. It was always about the person.
Yeah.
And making sure they were okay. And similarly, I guess when I think of myself, I just want to make sure I'm okay. I want to make sure I'm having fun. I don't need a lot of bullshit these days. I had enough ups and downs in my career that I just mentioned.
Yeah.
I got screwed around, and I've never let it hurt me. And I just want to make sure that I continue to be positive, kind. And that's the one thing about kindness. And what I tell people is, if you see somebody doing something, say what a great thing it is, but tell them why.
Yeah.
Particularly, yeah, if you want to be kind, tell them why. Because when you tell them they screwed up, you're going to tell them exactly why they screwed up. When they're doing something well and you catch them doing something well, tell them why.
Yeah.
It means a lot.
Yeah. Beautiful. And I love that you brought up too, just around you becoming a grandfather, as well as obviously already a father. That's one of the main elements I'm so curious about in the show, is really expanding our collective understanding of leadership. And absolutely, being a parent or a grandparent is a leadership role. And so I hear, even as I picture you doing, seeing what you just said there about, if you're going to tell them something kind, tell them why. I trust and know already that you will carry that forward, even as a grandparent. You know, like, yeah, it's like these value systems that we aspire to as companies are also so often overlapped with what we aspire to as a family. Right.
Well, and what you do, what I've done with the family on numerous occasions, but actually a lot of times it would be on my birthday, I would tell them why I love them.
Yeah.
And you know, it certainly caught my son's girlfriends off. Yeah. Guard, because yeah, I would tell them why I love them too. Yeah. And they're going like, who, what's this guy doing?
Right.
But you know, Jesse, it's very selfish. Yeah. Because it makes me feel good.
It's being selflessly kind makes me feel good. It is selflessly selfish. It is, you know, it's a beautiful cycle of, and that's source code. So that's the giving is receiving, and we keep it flowing. So
yeah.
I know you are such a well of wisdom. So we're going to be back after this break. And the final segment is about extracting the wisdom. So stay tuned here on Lead with Heart. I'm your host, Dr. Jesse Hansen. Thank you. We'll be right back with more insights, stories, and practices to help you lead from your whole self. This is Lead with Heart on Now Media Television. Leadership isn't just about decisions. It's about presence, compassion, and courage. I'm Dr. Jesse Hansen, somatic psychologist and healer. And on Lead with Heart, we explore what happens when we lead with awareness, compassion, and the body in mind. From brain health to relational intelligence, from trauma-informed leadership to embodied teams, each episode reveals a deeper way to lead. Lead with Heart is airing now on Now Media TV. Because the greatest leaders don't just guide people, they awaken them. And we're back. I'm Dr. Jesse Hansen, and you're watching Lead with Heart on Now Media Television. Let's continue embracing leadership with presence and purpose. Welcome back to Lead with Heart. Don't miss a second of this show or any of your Now Media TV favorites, streaming live and on demand whenever and wherever you want. So grab the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and enjoy instant access to our lineup of bilingual programs in both English and Spanish. Prefer podcasts? Listen to Lead with Heart anytime on the Now Media TV website at www.nowmedia.tv. Covering business, breaking news, lifestyle, culture, and more, Now Media TV is available 24/7, so the stories that you care about are always within reach. All right, we're back here on Lead with Heart with Paul. Great to have you here. You've been sharing so much about your life and your path. So this last segment, we really want to work on extracting the wisdom, which is already flowing from you right there before we took the break. I would open it up back to you to just talk about what you feel, the wisdom you're walking with now. For, you know, one of the ways, example, what I'm meaning is just, to always lead with kindness. And, you know, even when you tell something good, say why. I'm just curious, what other pieces of wisdom have you picked up over the decades?
Well, I guess what I find is in my current role as advisor, I would say going through my career, I didn't really think I was that smart. But as I've gotten into being the wise advisor, the things that I've seen and the things that how I've seen people react and how, you know, staying calm in the moment and being kind, how that's such a great long-term thing for anybody. Yeah. And yet, as I can still see people, I can still see myself in people that are rushing to get stuff done. They're not listening. There's a lot of people who want to be interesting versus interested. And even in those days, I was more about being interested. And I just think that a lot of people are spending way too much time trying to show how good they are. And if they actually just stopped and listened, they gained so much. And, you know, I just wish that people would slow down a bit and enjoy themselves and enjoy the moments, but also be kinder to people as they went along. Because what I learned is that, and this is after the fact, like I leave the role and I had a woman want to have a coffee with me. She had worked for me and she had left and had two different jobs after me. And she goes, I didn't realize how good of a leader you were till I left. Because that was one of the first jobs I had. And you were amazing. And Jess, I'd never heard, you know, I didn't get that. I get a lot of that feedback post. Yeah. So it tells me that more people in leadership roles should lead with kindness, be vulnerable, because even in my career, here's another one that happened. I would go on these national calls and talk to people about the passion that I had for the company and things that I wanted to do, and I would cry. And I would feel really bad initially that I'm crying. And then I had a number of women come up to me and say, that's really good that you're crying. That's really good. Another one was I didn't attend a Christmas party, an annual Christmas party, big deal corporately. And what had happened was there was a schedule mix-up. My son had a hockey tournament, and I felt bad not attending the Christmas party. And I had employees come up to me, no, that's really good. You're actually leading by example. You should be putting family first. So it's stuff like that, that, you know, I would also, you know, I had stories where I would be out in Vancouver and people would say, let's go skiing at Whistler because we just add a couple of days onto the trip. I said, no, I'm going to go home to Caledon, a little ski hill there. I'm going to ski with my kids. Those were things I did. And, you know, I may have missed out on some stuff corporately, but I'm so glad I missed out on those things. It was, family's important, balance in life's important. And that's still how I look at it. I still want to, the only thing that we talked about in the past is I used to have business kind of equal with family and friends. Business is now below and family and friends is up here. But they were always in my world. I never wanted to, you know, a lot of people get, you know, have two or three divorces because they work too hard.
Right.
That is so stupid in my opinion.
No, that's beautiful. The power of the balance. I also have a saying that wisdom is embodied knowledge. Just because we read it in a book and we acquire the knowledge doesn't mean that it's coming into our daily actions and into our embodiment. So yeah, I hear that. And you've given so many examples of where you are able to embody that kindness. And you know, the wisdom of that is that you've had to not only first learn how to show up, but then continually practicing, continually just disciplining yourself, continually, I would argue again, as the psychology side of it, I know everything's interconnected from our own development. So I just feel like you must have gotten so blessed in your child, you know, family of origin, in the sense of just being so well supported. Even if it wasn't perfect, it was such a great foundation that's allowed you to create from the ways that you do. And now in your career, where you're at this place where family and friends can actually be paramount over business. Yeah. And I'd also argue that there's an element of how you weave the two together, or at least showing up in business, you know, with that same kind of kindness that you would with your family. And I know that's how you show up.
Yeah. It's well, and the family laughs at me when I'm, there'll be a nice movie on and I'll be crying, and they might not be, but you know, that's just who I am. And I let that flow. Like, yeah. I just let that flow.
No shame. It feels right for me. No shame.
Yeah. There's also the same thing I got into when, in negotiating. So I remember a guy said, you have to take a negotiating course. And I take the negotiating course and I go, this is stupid. Like, the way I should negotiate is based on who I am, yeah, not who somebody tells me. Like, so, you know, and I listen to guys say, well, what I do in negotiation is I try and take everything away from the person and then give them something back to make them feel good in the end. Like, I beat the crap out of them.
Yeah.
I go, wow. The way I look at it is I go, we want to do a deal, right? Give me the best offer you can and I'll either take it or leave it.
Yeah.
I don't want to be, I want trust.
Yeah.
And that, the other thing I say trust wise is that if I find out you screwed me around, I'm going to tell everybody. I'm not going to do any more deals with you. I'll make sure people know that. But if you're being honest with me, we'll transact a lot.
Yeah.
We'll do a lot of things together. We'll have a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you've mentioned it now a number of times on the episode, the power of authenticity. I don't know that you've used that word each time, but that's what you're saying, where I don't want to do it because the course told me to do it. I want to do it how I want to do it, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that, yeah, that's a repeated theme that I've seen in my life, both in, you know, personal development as well as professional development. The more we're able to be authentic, and even with the hope today in this conversation we're having, for people to get to know who you are beyond just what we can see on LinkedIn profiles or other things like that, is to realize, wow, these are real humans that have gone through real challenges and real stories. So I think it's just really beautiful. And I want to know, Paul, if people do want to keep in touch with you, what's the best way for them to connect with you out there in the Digiverse?
An email to thinks58@gmail.com.
Is easy.
That's the easy one, yeah.
Yeah. Good, great, simple. And I feel like too, you know, oftentimes guests have, okay, this website, that, and I also get a sense that, you know, you are in this stage, which I say this all the respect, but of elder, right? And it's not necessarily based to your biological age, but this stage of life where you are truly a wisdom keeper, and you are a very stylish one at that, I must say. But it's, on a serious note, you know, it's just beautiful to see how you've evolved to this place in your life where you have so many things in balance and in place, and you walk with it, that air of kindness and yet confidence. Yep. Like what you said, as the old quarterback guy, you know, kicking his own buddies out of the huddle if they were going to be talking crap. And, you know, I think that mixture of the confidence and the style mixed with just such kindness is such a rare find in today's world. So I commend you for bringing that together. And so I wonder here, Paul, as we get ready to close up our time together today, what any, you know, just closing thoughts you have on what it's been like to share all this stuff, what any other insights or wisdom that's coming through you right now around leading with heart and the power of being authentic?
Well, it's, I think I also spent some time with you in Costa Rica, and I have to give a lot of credit for some of the clarity for where I am for you and the work we did together. And it was group work. It was with other men. It was really enlightening for me to recognize my new world. And that's where I went from King Fink to the new King Fink, with a slightly different world. And that that was very valuable. And I really feel that you did a great job, and that it was really worthwhile for me to discover that I was holding on to something I need to let go. So I want to thank you for that.
Oh, my, you're so welcome. Thank you for showing up. Thanks for being brave. And, you know, again, that to me, that's what is being authentic. Doesn't mean we are perfect. Doesn't mean we're happy. It means we're willing to face what's honest and real of whatever's coming up in the moment, you know, and that saying of know thyself and lead with heart naturally. I feel like, yeah, you had the wisdom and courage to do your own personal work and then watch how that impacts your leadership skills. And that's another theme that I know I've seen in my own life, as well as, you know, thousands of people now. It's there is sort of a dividends process for putting in the time, energy, focus on looking at what we do need to let go of, because we've all got that. No matter how great our lives look on LinkedIn or otherwise, each human, we all have some kind of suffering, something that needs to be let go of. And so I think that's a great place to bookmark our conversation for now, is to say, you know, do the work. Show up, be vulnerable, be authentic. It's going to pay out in so many different ways. And I just can't thank you enough, Paul, for coming on the show today and blessing us with your wisdom and your beautiful presence.
Right on, man.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much. And thank you for all our viewers staying tuned in and seeing this algorithm where each episode we get to learn more and more about different leaders out there and the humanness behind them, the place where strategy meets soul. So please stay tuned for more great episodes coming through here on Lead with Heart on Now Media TV. I'm your host, Dr. Jesse Hansen, and I'll see you next time.